last session by introducing a couple of bills that are very much on topic for our larger topic today. They're about government transparency and taxpayer accountability. So they're not exactly on government intrusion, but they certainly are about keeping us in the know about what our government is doing. He's from Keller, and he's going to talk to us about that legislation. He is a leader in several local Republican grassroots organizations or conservative grassroots organizations. And he's the president of Texas, I apologize, I wrote down ADV, Advantage Capital. I'm afraid I abbreviated a little bit too much. His company, and we are really glad to have him here today. Alex Winslow, is the executive director of Texas Watch, a nonprofit citizen advocacy group that specializes in looking into issues of fair markets and legal accountability. Dee Anderson, Tarrant County Sheriff Dee Anderson, right there. He has been the sheriff of Tarrant County since, I believe, 2001, which is when I became associated with Fourth Weekly. You know, coincidence?
Maybe not.
And he is also, he has been to, in 03, I believe, he went to the National Executive Institute, put on by the FBI, an extremely prestigious leadership training organization that very few law enforcement folks in the country get to go to and complete successfully. Very prestigious. Dr. Jose Angel Gutierrez, his name, do you currently teach at UTA?
I think I do.
Professor?
Students sometimes don't.
He was named one of the 100 outstanding Latino Texans for the 20th century. He was named a Chicano hero by the National Council for La Raza. He founded the Center for Mexican American Studies here at UTA and was a special advisor to the president of the university. And I'm afraid to say this with somebody that's much gray hair to say this. I shouldn't, but he won't. This, I don't like it, but I believe I studied you in one of my college courses a million years ago, and your activism in the valley. So, and I remembered your name that long, so you know I was impressed. So. And Dave Lieber, in a return engagement. I say, why don't we just start with Alex and go this way and talk as you would like about those issues.
Well, the work that we do at Texas Watch is primarily focused on consumer-oriented issues and less to do with the intrusion of government in our lives than the intrusion of corporate interests in our lives and the ability of corporate interests to collect and utilize your personal information to make decisions about whether they're going to offer you insurance, how much they're going to charge you for it, and those kinds of things. So we all know that every time we go online and we put our information in there, it goes into a big, huge database. And that big, huge database is used by all of these major data collection agencies to sort through and figure out who they can call so they can figure out what your risk level is as somebody who's buying car insurance. This is how, when you go on these online auto insurance providers, you put in who you are and they automatically are able to give you a quote because they have all this information about you already. And so what I find interesting isn't so much that that's happening, and I don't think that's surprising to anybody. We all know that that happens. What's interesting and a little bit surprising to me is that there's no concern about it. I don't think people are really concerned about the ability of major corporations to collect and use your data this way. We're very concerned about the ability of government to use our data this way, and we should be. But there's not nearly the same level of concern when corporations use our data. And I'd be interested in hearing what others on the panel have to say about that, or if they have any thoughts about it at all. And we can also talk about it as a group. You know, and the other thing that I think is interesting with regard to government and open records is we've had this move away from kind of public accountability and the ability for you and I to hold someone accountable in a public forum like the legal process. And it's been shifted into a closed, more private system of bureaucrats let's take, for instance, the state medical board, which now is in charge basically of policing the entire medical community without the ability of you as a private citizen, by and large, to exercise your own rights in a public way. And so now all of that is managed and handled by an agency that is kind of designed to protect the industry as opposed to protecting the public. So again, there's a consolidation of information within one area to the detriment of the public. So, thank you.
It's good to meet you, because every time I ever write a column about insurance, I always quote them, because you're a real troublemaker. You don't look like one, but you are, so good for you. There's a bunch of troublemakers up here today. A few years ago, in a school district in Haverford, Pennsylvania, right outside Philadelphia, they gave laptop computers to all the students. And what they found out was that the people in the school district were watching the students through the pinhole cameras on the laptop. There were lawsuits. That was just the tip of the iceberg. The FTC had privacy seminars this year, and I wrote two columns out of it. One of them was called "That Phone in Your Pocket is a Spy." And it talked about how everything you do on your phone is captured, blah, blah, blah. But then, 2 weeks ago, Edward Snowden, in an interview with Brian Williams on NBC, said something that kind of went over everybody's head, but I put it in my Sunday column because I didn't want it to go over everybody's head. He said that intelligence agencies, and I guess police agencies too, some, have the ability to turn your phone on when it's off, take pictures with your phone without you knowing it, and audio record whatever you're saying. So the phone that you have there, the ability exists for them to turn it on, photograph, and listen to you. And nobody knows that. And Snowden said it, and it just went right over everybody's head. I know people that keep black masking tape over the pinholes in their camera on their laptops because they don't want, you know, anybody to know what they're doing. So what's going on right now is something that's never ever gone on before. But didn't the Supreme Court, and Sheriff, you can probably clear this up, I think the Supreme Court just ruled recently that the local police departments had the ability to, like, intercept cell phone calls through towers, and I think the Supreme Court just ruled that that was against the law, and they needed search warrants to do that. Is that right?
True.
So there's a balance going on here right now, but we're losing the balance because the technology is overpowering. Here you go, Sheriff.
Thank you. I guess maybe representing a little bit of the other side of the equation, it is fascinating to me. I have conversations constantly with people who are concerned, and rightly so, about government intrusion and what we're finding out and what we know about them. And, you know, it always fascinates me because the people that I talk to who most just are fiery or just hardcore about guarding their privacy, you know, they don't want anybody to know anything, but I can look on Facebook and tell you where they're eating dinner tonight because they're going to check out at some restaurant. Everyone's perfectly willing to share information with the entire world, but they are very, very, getting very worked up about government and what we might know and what the police might know and what the government knows. So, you know, I think it's interesting what Dave said is true. And, well, know it or not, did you read the agreement for your cell phone when you said, "I agree to these terms"? No, you did not. Because you agreed that if we need to, we can turn your cell phone off. You agreed that if we have a specific government interest and life or safety is at stake, we can do those things. And in your agreement that you signed for your cell phone, you're saying in those situations we can do it. Now, don't think that we don't have anything better to do than sit around and listen to what y'all are saying at home, turning your phones on just for fun, because we don't. I mean, we're not doing that. You know? And some people think Big Brother is out there watching and listening to everything you do. But understand that September 11, 2001 completely changed the world. And anyone who doesn't understand or believe that is living in a world that is not the real world anymore. I mean, government interest, ability for the government to look and see and know things, you just went, you know, through the roof because of the terrorist activities that have gone on. Things haven't changed. The Boston Marathon, you know, just heighten it up more. If you've seen the behind the scenes or heard the behind the scenes hunt, how they found the Boston Marathon bombers, nothing was off the table for them. They had every tool imaginable at their ability to find those guys. Cell phone records, cell phone conversations, nothing. Civil liberties and civil rights kind of go out the window when something like that happens. Is that good or is that bad? We can discuss that if you want to in here. But understand that the government and law enforcement and the military now have the power to kind of just put civil rights kind of on hold when national security is at stake. And I think that's something we have to all, you know, come to grips with and understand. I don't think there's a vast conspiracy out there to spy on people for the sake of spying on people. I don't think any of us are interested in what you're having the conversation at your dinner table tonight. But if we get an indication that you're running a terrorist organization out of your kitchen, well, then we may be listening.
Thank you again for inviting me. I have a Droid phone. Does anybody here have a Droid phone? You do? If you go to, I just found this out the other day, if you go to maps.google.com/location history, you can find out everywhere you went with your phone for the past 30 days, minute by minute. You can hit play, and it'll show, you know, you drive around, where you're going and where you're not. So that information is there. And granted, it's a corporate interest, but I feel, and it's the news, right? You can find out the government has a lot of ties to some of these bigger government. I mean, they have access to that information. So it's not just in a corporate database, but as far as I'm concerned, it's half a step away from whether it's the NSA or other law enforcement from figuring out where you are and where you're going. And for me, I kind of disagree in the fact that I'm not willing to give up my liberty for a certain amount of a sense of security, okay? Because if you go and you look at, I mean, lately and over the last 10 or 15 years, we just get bombarded by every little thing that goes on in the United States, right? You hear about this and you hear about that, but you look at the data, Pew Research just came out, that the number of mass shootings, for instance, is actually down over the last few years. But we live in a world where if anything happens, you find out about it. And so I think that we have to make sure is that we maintain our liberty, maintain the privacy, and always hold government accountable for the information that we have. Listen, I think that public information should be public, whether it's the state medical board or pensions and whatnot, but private information should remain private. It is my information. I'm not doing anything wrong, and I still live in a country where we're innocent until we're proven that we're doing something wrong. On the state medical board on that issue, you know, one of the bills I worked on had to do with pensions, okay? So there was a bill filed and passed into law the session before I got there. And it basically said, you know, today if you want to do an open records request, you can, okay, for anybody that uses public money. But the law that was put in 2 years before said, except if it's for a request for a pension system, in which case the pension system itself decides whether to give you that information or not. Maybe the medical board also says, we're not going to do that. So the law is, you know, it's like Animal Farm, right? Everybody's equal, except some of them are equal than others. And that's what we're finding to me. And when we collect, and we're going back to the information that's collected, one of the things that I've been finding out and I'm going to be working on next session is license plate scanners, okay? If you go to the Grapevine Mall, Grapevine Mills Mall, you drive into that parking lot, your license plate is scanned, and it ends up in a database, and they look it up in terms of whether you stole that car or whatnot. But up until a few months ago, that information was never deleted. They had millions and millions and millions of those records over the last few years where you're going. And I understand keeping it for a certain amount of time, but what if someone has access to that information? What if that information ends up on the internet? And as I started digging through, I realized there's also a lot of private companies doing that as well. You know, those tow trucks that you see going around, they're also recording your license plate as well, trying to find people maybe to repossess their cars or whatnot. But at any given day, you'll be shocked to know how many times you're being photographed, watched, recorded. And we have a duty on the state government, I think, one, to make sure that this private information stays private, but also protected. Bank information is not allowed to go out. Hospital information, your medical records aren't allowed to find out. We should also put in protections in place so that people, private organizations that are recording you, that they maintain safety and security as well.
I'm going to need my hand, so with your permission, I won't use the microphone. Cause
you can stand up if you want.
No, I got a big voice. I I've been teaching here for a long time, so I do have some theoretical background of what I'm talking about. But I do teach a class. It's a graduate seminar, it's not undergrad, on the U.S. intelligence community, the overall monster. And then in all the undergraduate classes and upper division classes, usually in all of them, I have a component where I do talk about the Freedom of Information Act, the Open Records Act, the Privacy Act, state, federal, and how those tools have been used against minorities and dissidents. Okay? So there is some attempt to bring out information. I brought two books just to show you, because I not only have a PhD, I also have a JD. I don't do open records request litigation. I do voting rights litigation and run a little foundation that specializes on that. And, you know, occasionally a divorce or criminal matter, whatever. Okay. But my biggest claim to fame is my AD degree, my activist doctorate. I've been an activist much longer than I've been an academic. In fact, I chose to be that as opposed to an academic or a lawyer. I just picked that up because I needed, as some speakers in the other panel said, protection and insurance. You know, if I'm somewhat financially invincible, you can't do anything to me. You can take my job away, but I don't need you. Give me a job. So I'm here because I want to be in terms of the university. And I handle the cases that I want to handle, and, you know, so on. I'm not rich at all, believe me. I'm just somewhat not subject to the regular threats of economic sanctions and so on. Anyway, the AD is because I've been an activist forever, and that's how I got into this business. I started with others a political party in Texas when we were under one-party dictatorship, the Democrats, around 1970. And our candidate for governor at that particular time in 1972, his name is Ramiro Ramsey Muniz. And he ended up being charged with the first of three counts of trafficking with drugs. He told us that he was being set up because he was a lawyer. And we believed him because, you know, sometimes if any of you know or are aware of lawyers' ethics, sometimes people will come to you and say, you know, I'm in trouble. So you're like a priest, you're like a counselor, you're like a medical doctor. They share information with you, and it's confidential. So where is that borderline when you become part of the criminal event from what you've learned? Now you have ethics, you have responsibilities. Someone says, I'm going to go shoot somebody. Well, now that's a different story. But if someone says, I shot somebody, well, that's now legal defense. So it's a thin line here. And so he convinced us that he got snared because of that. And we started working on trying to get the documents. This is 1970, that we didn't have the Freedom of Information Act. We didn't have the Privacy Act. We didn't even have the Texas Open Records Act. Nothing. But we're trying to get the documents to prove this, and it was very difficult. Now, this book here begins to tell you how it all got broken apart at the federal level. Betty Metzger, the author of The Burglary, related to Pennsylvania, another suburb of Philadelphia. It must be a citadel there. The founding place must be the citadel also of espionage.
Media, Pennsylvania.
Yeah, exactly. In Media, Pennsylvania, not Haverford. This is another subdivision, another little suburb. These people, just like you and I, decided they were going to break into the FBI office because they thought that the FBI was not doing its job. The FBI says, you know, like law enforcement officials usually say, they're out there to protect us and to hunt down the criminal element. They thought that the FBI was doing political surveillance and monitoring of people and thwarting dissent. This is the time of Daniel Ellsberg, the Berrigan brothers, of Vietnam, 1971. So they break into the FBI office and steal the FBI records at this suburban office. And lo and behold, they were correct. What they found was that about 9 out of 10 files had to do with monitoring individual people for their politics. Nothing to do with hunting down kidnappers, bank robbers, rapists, interstate traffickers, none of that. So they did what the others that I mentioned, Berrigan, Ellsberg, they started, you know, feeding information to Betty Metzger. So now that the statute of limitations, that means when you're past that and you can't be charged with the crime you committed, breaking into an office and stealing, when that statute passed, see, they're both is where Congress and others said, wait a minute, this is horrible. We got to do something. And so you got Watergate, Ellsberg. Ellsberg, let me just quickly compare him to Snowden. Ellsberg, the only reason he got off is he stole documents, just like they accused Snowden. And he released information, just like Snowden, and of course the military and government people saying he's costing American lives because of this. Well, the same thing about Ellsberg. Ellsberg, they were hunting him, they charged him, they arrested him, the Berrigans went to prison. Ellsberg didn't because the administration changed. And the Department of Justice, Attorney General, and so on, decided, well, it's not necessary to prosecute. Berrigan and Ellsberg, what they were saying was, the President, the Vice President, the Secretary of State, Secretary of Defense, all these people have been lying to us. There's more people being killed, we're spending more money, we're bombing places we shouldn't. That was the official document story. In the press, they were telling us they were saving us from communism, they were protecting South Vietnam, yada, 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 yada. All lies. Well, this is what Snowden is proving now. Okay, and this is the file, the Snowden files. This is the fellow that Luke Harding, is the fellow that he first interviewed with. That was not the person he leaked the information to. That was Glenn Greenwald. Yeah, and Greenwald just got a book out, but this one is first. And so you can debate whether Snowden is a treasonous person or whether he's a whistleblower. There's others not so fortunate. You know, Bradley Manning, who's now Chelsea Manning. She's in prison, and we'll remain in prison here until, you know, about 15 more years, and then we'll be out. But these people are telling us not only some of the information that was already shared with you, that the intrusion is everywhere now. Your passport, for example, your GPS in your car, your phones, of course, all the social media. But on the Boston bombers, for example, what was not said was part of the imaging that was captured to know the faces of these people is the digital imaging. Let me tell you how intrusive this is. When you go to the grocery store, or you go to the supermarket, or you go to the mall, and you look at the window displays, or you look at the display of cereal boxes, or you look at the fruit, whatever it is, there are cameras, and they're digitally imaging your face. Now, what they want is not to track you down, to hunt you down. They're trying to figure out what kind of person you are, how long you stayed lingering, look at this product as opposed to this other product, what you ended up buying, because then it comes to the credit card, you know, when you swipe it, whether this is better shelf space or down here. You know, if you're an old guy like me, you got to go like this. So I seldom look up anymore. It's apart from not having to look at the computer. I usually look at things down here. So they know that. All this because they got your face and they know who you are. The distance between your eyes, your side of your nostrils, your nose. Because you can change the color, but not the rest of the build unless you go get a facelift or something. So they're doing this. Digital imaging is how they got the pictures of who they were looking for. And that's done all the time. Anyway, that's today. What has happened, to give a history, you know, surveillance is as old as humankind. If we go back to, you know, hunter-gatherers, you had to know where. So somebody had to go watch and look and report and share information. So it's as old as forever. Okay? What's happened is it used to be surveillance, okay? Me watching, me listening, me trying to do something with the technology that we had then, to now what the contemporary term is data surveillance. Nobody has to come watch you and sneak up on you and look around the corner or through your window or anything. You're doing it yourself, as already said, you know, self-reporting. You have to provide all this stuff, and you do voluntarily. Divorce lawyers do this all the time. Through discovery, the first thing you go do is look at Facebook, because you're going to lie when you answer questions. But you posted it on Facebook. Say, oh, I'm a good mother. I'm home by midnight taking care of my kids. I was at Fandango, USA, you know, at 2 o'clock in the morning. It's there. So data surveillance is the modern taking. And for this to work, they have to do this metadata gathering. That is, they got to get everybody's information to find the patterns, to find the paths, to find the locations, and so on. So it is really blanket. Now, I disagree with the sheriff and everyone else who says that 9/11 changed the world. No. 9/11 was used by the government to change our world, to give them total license. It isn't any longer a government by the people, for the people, of the people. is government for government, period. The number one priority of government is to preserve government. Now, they call it national security, and they scare the hell out of you. And as you heard, you know, because we're trying to protect your liberties. No, on the contrary. Modern statutes, the statutes that we operate under, they have secret courts that no lawyer allowed. Well, we've had that since the grand jury, you know. That was witch hunt, we still have it. These are things not new, but they are pervasive. There's very little recourse. If you get declared by the president and others involved at that level that you're a terrorist or a combatant, you're gone to a secret prison outside of the United States, beyond jurisdiction. Nobody will ever know. Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I brought some documents, and I'll close with this, just to show you different aspects of the surveillance. Now this is, I'll just go by the order I have them here. This is really scary. This is the counterintelligence program, and most of the people on the law enforcement side was like, well, that was Hoover, as if somehow this misguided, complex, complicated man was responsible for everything. He even called the FBI the seat of government. Think about this. That's how he signed documents, seat of government. He was, not the president, not the attorney general, not anybody else. He issued a memo at this particular time under the counterintelligence program. Dated February 9th, they went through March. He sent it to 27 of the then 58 field officers of the FBI. And this is the most devastating killer memo there is. And then they never repeated it because they realized they screwed up making this public eventually. Because Media Pennsylvania, the Congress got involved, Watergate, and they said, we've got to have some oversight. And they passed the Freedom of Information Act, which is the Privacy Act. The importance of those two is that if you write for a government record, there are exemptions, as you already were told. There's more in the federal government. But they are, and they're used frequently, especially B7-6, which is about law enforcement. They won't give you any information about methods, tactics, informants, all that. So they use it all the time. And if they can't deny you information under the Freedom of Information Act, they'll invoke the Privacy Act. So we can't give information because that's private, like the FISA, you know, and some of these other private things about you. Now, if you die, then anybody can get your information. But if you write about me, they say, well, you can't. He's still alive. You've got to get his permission. So, anyway, in this COINTELPRO memo, listen to the words. This is the FBI director writing to his field agents, telling him to do this as part of the counterintelligence program. Prevent the coalition. I'm not going to read all the rest of it. But just listen to the strategies and tactics. Prevent the coalition. Prevent the rise of a Messiah. Prevent violence. Prevent the militant black nationalist groups and others from gaining respectability. Final goal should be to prevent the long-range growth of militant organizations, especially among the youth. Now, there's another memo which discusses specific tactics. Disrupt, destroy, delegitimize, and so on. This is not gathering information. This is now actively the stopping, dissent, and destroying people's organizations.